Bibelen beskriver vårt liv på olika sätt, bland annat som en vandring. Och jag vet inte om ni vet det, men i Bibelen står det, i Psaltarpsalmen står det en del vandringssånger, valfartssånger, som folk sjöng när de skulle till Jerusalem som pilgrimar, till fester, till att offra. Och jag har skrivit en hel prediken om allt det spännande i detta som ni inte kommer få höra. Men men jag vill ta den bilden och utdypa den lite mer. Jag ska läsa en av dessa valfartssalmerna. Kanske ni har vet det, att det är en sån valfartssalm. Jag ska läsa psalm 121 som en introduktion till det jag ska säga. Tänk dig att du är på väg till Jerusalem. Att möta Gud ansikte till ansikte. Jag ser upp emot bergen. Varifrån ska jag få hjälp? Hjälpen kommer från Herren som har gjort himmel och jord. Han låter inte din fot slinta. Han vakar ständigt över dina steg. Han sover aldrig. Han vakar ständigt, han som beskyddar Israel. Herren bevarar dig. I hans skugga får du vandra. Han går vid din sida. Solen ska inte skada dig om dagen. Inte månen om natten. Herren bevarar dig från allt ont, från allt som hotar ditt liv. Herren ska bevara dig i livets alla skiften, nu och för evigt. Nu kan ni låtsas som ni sitter i bilen och lyssnar till en ljudbok. Och jag ber om ursäkt för er som inte är så bra på, om det är någon av er som inte är så bra på engelska. För den här är på engelsk. Det är en betraktning över vandringen. Om ni vill ha den efteråt på ett papper för att läsa den, att det är bättre, så ska ni få det. For all you English speaking, this is a treat for you. Det är en betraktning som jag har skrivit om en del av vägen. En del av vad man kan möta. Så får ni se vad ni känner igen er i. The fog wrapped itself around her like a large wet blanket. Where had it come from so suddenly? By now, it was as if it had been there forever. In the beginning, before she started off on this journey, she'd envisioned nothing less than a friendly sun to accompany her most days, shining down on her from a clear sky, and perhaps every now and then a gentle breeze playing with her hair. Of course, there would perhaps be a few rain showers in the night, but no more than what she and her tent would be able to cope with, of course. On the day of her departure, the weather had been lovely. And she had taken the keys out of her purse to lock her front door for the last time. And while going through her mental list of what she'd planned to bring with her, she noticed the warmth from the sun caressing her hand and enjoyed the way its rays had created sparkles of light in the metal of her key. At that moment, she felt a sudden surge of joy and optimism. She had been warned that her journey might also prove to be challenging at times, but she'd heard of others leaving the safety of their home and embarking on similar journeys and returning, having been changed for the better. So she'd left with a light heart, expecting the same thing to happen to her. And indeed, the first couple of days had met her expectations in every possible way. And she thoroughly enjoyed walking on a pleasantly grassy path which took her through the beautiful spring-dressed birchwood that surrounded her little village, listening to the natter of an array of little birds that busied themselves with finding food for their little ones. I am a free bird, she said to herself. She must have been very naive. Already on the third day of her journey, this grey, wet, formless substance had suddenly appeared out of nowhere, enveloping her completely, and since then it had followed her wherever she went. Now, she could no longer even remember the sensation of casually strolling along the path on a fine, clear day. It was just before the fog appeared, in the morning on the third day, that she'd met this man who seemed to have appeared from nowhere and suddenly came striding down the path towards her with a broad grin on his face and arms held out to greet her. Did she know him? She wasn't sure, although there was something very familiar with his face. She'd taken a quick look at his outfit. From the little she knew of hikes, mostly from books, she willingly admitted, he seemed to be wearing the right sort of stuff. "Pleased to meet you on a lovely day like this," the man had said enthusiastically as he grasped her hand with both hands and shook it vigorously. "I'm your guide, and I know you very well. I've eagerly followed your preparations for this journey, and I'm so pleased about the way you stopped to notice the sunlight as its rays created sparkles of light in the metal of your key, just as you locked your front door for the last time. I really am so happy that this gave you such delight. Such a good beginning, it really is. Stay close to me and you will find your way." And with these strange words, he turned around and started walking a couple of steps in front of her. She was taken aback. She hadn't noticed anyone watching her as she left the house. But he must have been standing alarmingly close in order to notice such a small detail. This was altogether scary. Was he a stalker? Still, on the other hand, there was something reassuring about him taking the lead like this, and dumbfounded, she just followed him in his steps like an obedient dog. If someone would ask her why on earth she'd entrusted her journey and her life to a stranger who secretly had been spying on her, she wouldn't have known what to say. She couldn't really explain what made her trust him. He just seemed genuine, I guess, she would say to herself whenever a small inner voice would question her own choice of action. However, very soon she learned the necessity of staying close to him as she was forced to trust him when she suddenly no longer could see the road ahead, nor the tall birch trees along the route, let alone the friendly sun because of that sudden fog. And now she was so thankful that she was not walking this path entirely on her own. Sometimes the fog was so thick she couldn't see more than half a meter in front of her, and she knew she would completely lose her way if she let her guide out of sight. Of course, at those times, she could hardly see him at all, and this frightened her. Sometimes, the only sign of him being around was the sound of his steady, rhythmical breath. Every now and then he would make a comment like, "Careful down this slope, it's slippery," or "We're just now approaching a narrow bridge, stretch out your hands and grab hold of the rails." Sometimes there was just silence, and she always started panicking when this happened. Had he disappeared, left her alone, and she would be groping frantically in all directions. "I'm here," he would say then, his own big, rough, but warm hand grabbing hold of hers. "I've just stopped, and you must rest too. Have a snooze." At times when he stood still like that, or presumably sat next to her, she could not even hear his breath. There would be utter silence. She did not always manage to get much rest when it was like that. It was hard not to think of the possibility of him having silently slipped away and just left her. And she often tried to fight off her fear by telling herself that he would never do such a thing. She often ended up stretching out a timid hand in the direction of where she assumed he was, or in a thin, frightened voice whisper, "Are you still there?" He always was. She asked her guide once how he was able to lead her at all. Was the fog not filling every inch of space around both of them? "I can see through it," he replied. "Why can I see through it then?" she asked. "Oh, that's because if you could, You wouldn't have stayed close to me, he'd laugh. The way he said it, she could almost think he wanted her to stay close to him. Besides, I've walked here before and I know my way, he'd added in a more serious tone. At the moment, they walked along in silence. Him first, her slightly behind. He was quite a lot taller than her, so all she could focus on was his back. She fixed her eyes on his backpack and the edge of his collar. He walked with a steady pace, one arm swinging, the other securing the grip around the handle of one of these handcrafted walking sticks she'd seen in a village shop a couple of weeks ago. It made a thumping sound, rhythmically hitting the ground as they walked. He swore by his walking stick, wouldn't part from it, not even when they sat down to have a sandwich from a seemingly endless supply at the bottom of his backpack. My dad gave it to me. It reminds me of him. It reminds me that I should always steady myself with a firm substance other than myself, he'd explained one afternoon. Now, whenever she heard that thumping sound, it gave her a strange sense of security. In the beginning, she'd all absolutely loved those simple but very tasty ham and cheese sandwiches he pulled out of his backpack at lunchtime, not to mention the occasional tuna or salmon option. The cheese and ham ones actually had avocado and black pepper in them, and the salmon was almost always accompanied by fresh eggs, dill, and a generous squirt of lemon. She had no idea how he did it. They hadn't passed the village in ages. However, by now, she started to become a little tired of eating the same old things over again, but didn't dare mentioning it in case she'd hurt his feelings. At least they never seemed to run out of food. Her guide wore an old maroon coat. It seemed to have been made out of some kind of leather and had clearly been around for a few decades. It was well worn, and the leather was almost shiny in many places, but it had no holes in it, and the coat had not yet started to unravel in the seams. It seemed to be held together by some sort of magic thread that never wore out. It's completely waterproof, he would boast whenever she made a comment about his coat. It's my dad's coat. It's my absolute favorite. And it's his favorite too. He would grin and pat himself on his chest pocket. This old pocket hides many treasures, he would say and wink to her. He never carried a water bottle. It annoyed her slightly. She would sometimes get so thirsty. She could walk for hours in silence, feeling that old thirst become more and more penetrable and registering how her body became weaker. But she would say to herself that she didn't want to bother him constantly, lest he would think she was too needy and grow tired of her nagging. So she didn't say anything. In the end, however, whenever her growing desperation forced her to muster enough courage to express her quite urgent need for a drink, he would stop so suddenly that she nearly bumped into him, point in a certain direction with a stick and exclaim, "Oh, isn't it funny? Right here's a little stream. And I know the water around here is really fresh. Just go for it," while chuckling to himself. By the time he'd finished his sentence, she would have started to hear the sound of a little stream and would walk towards it, thinking only of quenching her thirst. "Oh, and don't forget to take off your shoes and stick your feet into it as well. It's so refreshing," he would say to her as she drank greedily. "You'd feel much better for it." And he was always right. It was the best water in the world. This happened every time, but it still surprised her. Still, the nagging sense of shame prevented her from telling him sooner next time. Or was there an unwillingness to acknowledge her own thirst? She found him to be a very strange and fascinating man. She really wanted to show him that she could cope without too much fuss. She could now feel the terrain getting rougher. From the little she could see right in front of her, the path they were currently on had become had become narrower and narrower, climbing snake-like more and more steeply upwards among big boulders. Soon the path itself disappeared, and she found herself climbing over rocks, up and down, and up and down. She didn't seem to get anywhere at all, and very soon she grew discouraged and very tired. Her hands were sore and her muscles ached from trying to maintain balance while hoisting herself up and scrambling across endless amounts of boulders, all slippery from the damp fog enveloping them, as well as some kind of slimy moss that somehow seemed to grow on them. She caught herself wanting to ask her guide to grab her hand, but stopped herself. That was silly. She had to be able to manage. What would he think of her otherwise if she needed help in every little thing? After a good deal of scrambling, the boulders finally seemed to give way to smaller rocks. "Careful here," he said. "You want my hand?" "Oh, I'm okay, thanks," she said, trying to persuade herself that they were over the worst bit now. However, these smaller rocks turned out to be even harder to walk on. She couldn't seem to find her balance, and they kept rocking unsteadily whenever she stepped on one of them. And the fact that she couldn't see very far ahead made her feel disorientated and unbalanced. She decided to concentrate only on what was going on right underneath her feet, and not trying to look out for the blurred shape of her guide at the same time. "Where are you taking me?" she asked, trying to cover up her increasingly fearful doubts regarding his choice of path with a cheerful, light-hearted tone of voice. Instead, the words came out as a sort of squeak. This time her guide surely had lost his way, hadn't he? Did he think about the fact that she wasn't exactly Superwoman? She got tired and disoriented so easily, and her muscles had not been used this way for a long time. "Upwards and onwards, upwards and onwards," he said with a laugh. That did it. She couldn't take it anymore. Surely they were going to go on forever. Surely they were never to get any rest. This fog would never go away. This strange guide of hers would let her perish in this treacherous, slippery, endless, rocky sea of greyness. "I'm so tired," she gasped. "I'm not going to manage to go even one step further. Let's turn around, shall we?" She made a little twist with her upper body, trying to turn and look back in the direction they came from. A useless idea, of course, because of that wretched fog. At that very moment, she slipped and completely lost her balance, and had not her guide quickly turned around and caught her by the collar of her coat, who knows what could have happened to her. As she slipped, she tried to steady herself on a nearby rock, only to set it in motion. This rock, in turn, hit other stones, and soon she could hear a landslide of rocks tumbling down the mountain in the direction they'd just come from. She turned ice cold as she considered the possibility of someone else trying to climb that particular path just now. But who could be so silly as to try to climb such a steep hill covered in fog? Only herself and her strange guide, no doubt. And of course, her speculations about turning back had been firmly put an end to. That path had presently disappeared underneath a ton of rocks. She shuddered and discovered she was shaking, her heart beating fast underneath her, by now quite sweaty, woolen sweater. She could have been rolling down the side of the mountain at this very moment, being beaten to death by a ton of smouldering rocks, were it not for her companion's quick reaction. "Here, sit down over here, and I'll take a look at you," he said gently, after having steadied her. She banged her elbow against something as she slipped and was bleeding, feeling quite sorry for herself. And her ankle had been twisted and was hurting quite a lot. She obeyed, and he took care of the wound with gentle, efficient hands and then attended to the sore ankle. "Hey, what sort of shoes are you wearing?" he suddenly exclaimed. He shook his head. "No good. No good at all. These trainers give no support at all. Slippery are they as well. Perhaps good for running on flat surface, but definitely not for boulder jumping." He reached down in his rucksack and pulled out a pair of mountain boots. "You need proper support for your ankles. That's what you need." He gently pulled off her old trainers and put on the new boots. "There, This should do the trick. Poor little one, how you must have struggled on these slippery soles. Never be afraid to ask for help. I've got a lot of useful things right here in my backpack. Now, have a cup of tea with me, since we're sitting here all the same. She obliged obediently, and he handed her a steaming mug. The warmth from the hot tea spread round her entire body. Her heart slowed down a little, her muscles relaxed a little. Then, as he passed her a tin of biscuits, he paused and gave her an alarming, but not entirely unkind, look. "You doubted my guidance," he said quietly. "You forgot I walked this route before. I'm as familiar with this route as I am with the content of my own chest pocket." He slapped his chest just above his heart. She felt uneasy. "I would never have let you fall and tumble down in that landslide," he added, and as if he read her fearful thoughts. "I am right nearby. At every moment, I know exactly where you're at. Had you asked me to grab your hand earlier, I would have." How could that be? Had he read her thoughts? "I'm sorry," she mumbled, a little ashamed of herself, but still feeling a little uneasy. "You're forgiven," he replied firmly. "Now, have another biscuit. These ones are ginger and chocolate. They're my absolute favourite," he said with a grin, and handed her a different biscuit tin. "They're my favourite too," she said to herself. "How could this be? How can you say you always know exactly where I'm at? Why would you care about my taste in biscuits?" She had to admit that she really wanted him to like her. But how could he like her if he knew what she was thinking? But surely, he couldn't really. She felt exposed, uneasy, ashamed, but couldn't find the words or the courage to express her feelings. They were soon on their way again, and her ankle felt absolutely fine, but she was now in deep thought and struggled a bit to both keep an eye on his collar and on the rocks she was climbing at the same time. She started to grow tired again. At least her new boots kept her from slipping and stumbling all the time, but her legs were now feeling very heavy and her back ached. She realized that somehow she must have twisted some muscles in her lower back at the time she tried to turn back and lost her footing. After a little while, to her own surprise, she heard herself ask the guide in a feeble voice if he could be so kind as to give her a hand across. In an instant, she felt his big hand grab hers. Thus they climbed, her hand in his, slowly but steadily. After a few moments, she could hear the guide humming a little tune, mixing the words upwards and onwards in with a melody. After a while, the path appeared again, became quite pleasant to walk on, and seemed to wind itself through the forest of fir trees. She knew, because every now and then, she felt their wet branches touch her hair and she would get a glimpse of a big dark brown tree trunk. She now found she was able to walk more steadily again and she let go of her guide's hand. But the fog was as thick as ever. The two of them continued their slow wandering, ever a little upwards, ever a little onwards. That's where she suddenly heard the sound of unfamiliar steps coming out of the fog from behind. It was the sound of someone walking with a quick, confident pace. A stranger was approaching. Before she could ever consider what to do, a tall, broad-shouldered man suddenly appeared, bumped into her and almost knocked her over. Apparently, he had not heard her steps nor the thumping sound of her guide's walking stick. The first thing she noticed about this man was his short dark hair glimmering with white little droplets of water from the fog. And then she caught a glimpse of a pair of brown eyes. She found him almost alarmingly handsome. And a dazzled fascination very quickly overcame any sense of danger. However, as she regained her bodily balance from their sudden meeting, she looked around for her guide, just to make sure she knew where he was. He was nowhere to be seen. But before she could gather her thoughts and think of the implications of this, the man spoke. "Well, hello there. At last there's someone to be met on this road," he said cheerfully. "I'm ever so sorry that I almost knocked you over." It's this wretched fog. It doesn't suit my rather quick pace. His broad smile made her slightly dazed, and suddenly she became very aware of the fact that she hadn't checked her own appearance in the mirror for ages. Was her hair okay? She could feel the remains of a recently devoured salmon sandwich sticking to one of her teeth, and tried to use her tongue to prevent, to remove it as discreetly as she could, and at the same time look casual and undisturbed. "I'm sorry if I frighten you," the man said apologetically. "Are you travelling in these foggy mountains, or on your own?" Mountains. The word slipped out between her lips before she could even prevent it from happening. She'd not thought about that. Well, of course she must be in the mountains. They had been walking upwards for such a long time. That would, of course, explain the fog. There was often sudden fog in the mountains, wasn't there? But she'd been so focused on the challenging terrain underneath her feet that she hadn't noticed this obvious fact. How embarrassing! She quickly added, "Oh no, I do have a guide with me who knows these mountains even better than his own chest pocket, but he's not here at the moment." She desperately hoped that the man hadn't noticed the fact she didn't really know where she was. He studied her for a moment and appeared to be slightly amused. "Why don't we walk together for a while then?" he offered with a wry smile. "I'm sure your guide will catch up with us in not too long anyway." After having thought about this offer for a minute or two, she accepted. This good-looking man in front of her seemed quite nice. A gentleman. A very attentive towards her, she thought. He had clearly been working his way upwards on the same path as she had. After all, they seemed to be heading towards the same goal. Why not? Her guide would not be very far away anyway. He must just have walked ahead of her to check out where they were going. Surely they would bump into him soon. She imagined him becoming very proud of her as soon as he learned that she'd found her way without his constant step-by-step guidance. And so it was that the two of them continued on their journey together. They walked side by side, not one after the other, as she and her guide had walked. This felt more pleasant. "So," the man began after a time of silence while studying her shoes, "your walking boots are of very good quality, and you look like an experienced traveller. Why would you need a guide to lead you every step of the way? The path is well laid out and easy to follow, even in a fog like this. Surely your guide would have other more important things to do. You could arrange to meet him every now and then to discuss maps and adjust your route, and he could spend most of his precious time leading less experienced groups along." She looked down on the well-trodden path, lined with a suitable layer of pine needles. He was right. This particular stretch was pleasant and easy to travel. As she was contemplating this, she suddenly pictured herself a few days ago, struggling to cope with boulders and sliding rocks and not at all being capable of finding any resemblance of a path on her own, let alone walk it safely in those old, inadequate trainers. Who knew what sort of terrain they would have to fight their way through after the next bend in the road? But then again, she did have different shoes now, not to mention the fact that she'd gained quite a lot of experience by now. Perhaps it was time to give her guide a break. And who knows, perhaps her guide had already arrived at the same conclusion and had left her for a while just to see how she would get on without his help. But why had he not said anything before he left? She intended to discuss the matter with him whenever he caught up with them again. Håll ut, det är inte så jättelänge kvar nu. Her companion walked with a very quick pace indeed, and soon she found it increasingly hard to keep up. "You must be very fit, since you'll be able to walk so fast for such a long time, she offered admiringly, while trying not to reveal how out of breath she had become. But he had noticed, and replied in superior, almost fatherly tone, yeah, well, I realized a long time ago that I do not need such substantial footwear as you have. It's too heavy. And on this kind of path, you don't really need it either, to be honest. I'm sorry if you have to work a bit to keep up with me. I'm just so used walking in this tempo. I guess I'll be able to slow down just a little. Not long ago had he mentioned her boots as a sign of quality and experience, and now suddenly he said she didn't need them, that they even slowed them down. Confused, she looked down on the sturdy boots she'd been given, and that's when she suddenly noticed his footwear. He actually walked this treacherous mountain path in smart, feet-hugging black leather shoes of a very famous brand, which would no doubt have cost him a small fortune. Yet, they still looked impeccable, as if they had just been buffed. She was amazed, and her admiration of this man reached new heights. She forgot about her own confusion for a moment. How on earth did you manage to climb those boulders back there with shoes like this? And how did you manage to get past the landslide? Surely you must be a great athlete, she blurted out. Boulders? For a split second he looked puzzled. Then he gave her an understanding, almost pitying look. The path has been, and will continue to be, like this, all the way, he stated firmly. It was clearly signposted from the beginning. Did you miss it? Oh, yes, maybe you and your guide did not notice the signposts because of the fog. Her heart sank and she suddenly felt dizzy and nauseous. Oh, poor you, he continued. You have clearly come by an unnecessarily difficult route. What a miracle that you made it thus far. Well, you can relax. You're now in capable hands. Her companion patted his chest. How fortunate that I caught up with you. Otherwise, you might have strayed off the path again and been miserable indeed. She didn't know what to say. She felt so small, so stupid, so inexperienced. An experienced guide indeed. She could still remember her guide's words. I am as familiar with this route as I am with the content of my own chest pockets. She blushed with shame. How could she let him guide her without question? Trusted him so blindly and ever, not even considering using her own resources and reason. And suddenly she noticed how utterly tired she'd become. After that, they walked on in silence for a long time. She became more and more relieved as time passed and they didn't bump into her old guide. How would she be able to relate to him in a reasonable way if she met him now? He had seemed so genuine, so safe. Now she knew that he had led her astray and had caused her much more trouble than necessary. She shuddered. How did I end up here anyway, in the middle of nowhere? How could I trust a man I hardly knew? She asked herself, full of remorse. Every now and then, memories of his huge warm hands grabbing hers, his strange and infectious laughter, or the gentle way he had attended her wounds, would pop into her mind. Annoyed, she tried to shake them off. But somehow, they lingered and made her feel more and more uneasy. After a while, she had to admit to herself that she even missed hearing the familiar sound of his thumping walking stick. Who's there? Strangers on the path? A voice suddenly exclaimed through the fog. They both stopped, and not knowing why, she felt a sudden pang of guilty conscience. She could hear her companion clear his throat, getting ready for an encounter. At first, they saw no one, but then, slowly, a ghost-like, a slender figure appeared out of the grey mist. It was an elderly woman. Her curly white hair gracefully framed a not unfriendly wrinkled face in which two lively green eyes looked straight at them. Oh, a "It's you, my friend," the elderly lady said to the man as soon as she laid eyes on him. "You're no stranger to me, that's for sure. And who is your companion on this particular stretch of the road? Let me have a look at you. There's a dear," she said, as she gave this rather confused companion a very strange look. "You never give up, do you?" the dark-eyed, handsome gentleman suddenly snapped, ignoring the stranger's question. "Do you still want me to take a different path?" "Well, as you may notice, I am not easily swayed. I enjoy walking this path. My pace is steady and quick, and I expect to be out of this fog very soon. Actually, as much as I would desire to, I'm not here to try to persuade you otherwise this time. I was actually sent to look for this young lady standing next to you," the elderly lady replied calmly, but not without a hint of impatience. "You see, she doesn't know it, but she's very late. She ignored her guide and missed the turn. In fact, she would have arrived at the resting place some time ago. The head of the young lady in question..." Spun. "Ignored my guide. Missed the turn. Should have arrived at the resting place. What is this strange old lady talking about? How could I be late when I walked in such a high tempo and kept to the path all along? My guide was the one who deserted me. No, not the other way around. How could he have left me like this, without a warning? And where is he now, by the way? Doesn't he dare to face me himself?" Angry and confused, she looked from one to the other. She wanted to demand an explanation, to protest, to stand up for herself, but not a word managed to escape her lips, and the three of them stood in silence for a few seconds. Then her handsome companion shrugged. "Well, my dear old lady, if you found the one you were looking for, I suspect she will not need me anymore. I must be on my way, so long." And off he went without even giving her one last glance. "I don't understand," she said to the old woman. "My companion talked about this path being clearly signposted and that my guide clearly must have missed them because of the fog. Was he lying?" "No, my dear, he was telling the truth," the lady replied with a gentle tone in her voice. "There are many signposts leading up to this path. In fact, there is one right behind you now. Next to one of these, it's now invisible entrances. But the fog is so thick at present that not even your handsome friend here noticed it. The signposts all have the same thing written on them. It says, main path. And that's what they all point to. But it doesn't mean that this main path leads anywhere in particular. The name only points to the fact that it's the path most people choose to go. In fact, these signposts were rather put up as a warning. You see, this path doesn't go anywhere. It goes in a big circle around a mountainous hill, but that's impossible to notice when the fog is this thick. Many paths lead into it, but you would need an experienced guide to get you out, and you ignored yours. Your handsome companion and many with him has walked round the same path several times without knowing it. I've tried to point it out to him again and again, but he thinks I'm an old grumpy woman who does not know what life is all about. Oh, and here it is. I mean, your guide. I better be off. Nice to have met you. I hope we'll meet again soon." And the elderly lady turned to walk away. She smiled the loveliest smile ever seen, and her green eyes twinkled. "Goodbye," she said cheerfully over her shoulder, and slipped away, back into the fog. At that very moment, she felt a familiar, warm hand on her shoulder. She instantly turned around and faced two blue eyes, and everything came out at once. All her confusion, all her frustration, all her anger. "Why did you leave me just when I needed you most?" she almost shouted. "I looked for you when that man arrived, but I couldn't find you. Where had you gone?" She tried to hold back a sob, but couldn't. "I had gone nowhere. I was right there," her guide replied calmly. "And I walked next to you all the way as you walked on that path with your companion. You could have reached out and touched me, but you didn't. You could have whispered, 'Are you still there?' And I would have replied, as I always do, but you didn't. Why did you doubt me? She couldn't help but feeling a little humiliated. If it's true that you walked next to me all the way, she said defensively, why did you have to send that lady to come and find me? You see, I wanted to go to meet her and hear the truth about the nature of this path directly from her, was his reply. She's got so much experience. She's great, isn't she? I'm so very fond of her. But she was not satisfied. Oh, but why did you take me to that treacherous path in the first place? She asked accusingly. Oh, my dear one, I took you there to learn, you see, he replied gently and looked at her boots. And to rest your feet for a while on a different surface than boulders and stones. And now you have. Come, let us find the proper path again. It's right here to the right. I made you a walking stick. Now we have one each. That's not bad, eh? Slowly but steadily they continued their journey in a world of grey mist. Fog. Her ever-lingering, damp companion. On some days she felt it as if it had penetrated her skin and come to dwell inside her, like a silent, sly ghost, constantly changing its shape. Whenever she would try to grab hold of this thing, try to address it, it would disappear between her fingers. Everything in her mind became dim and undefinable, and whenever she tried to conjure up some kind of happy thoughts, they seemed to either fade and quickly become pale and insignificant, or else become transformed into a sort of mockery, suddenly sounding hollow and twisted and leaving her feeling even more miserable and hopeless. On days like these, she walked in a sort of grey, damp melancholy, not paying much attention to where they walked or what she did. She couldn't even feel hunger or thirst, and her guide didn't say much either. But every now and then she would sense occasional inquiring looks coming from his big blue eyes right through that thick fog. It was as if he wanted her to say something. But she couldn't even make herself form a single meaningful sentence. Her tongue had stuck in her mouth. Her confusing, melancholic internal discussions remained exactly that, internal. She couldn't even make herself try to look in the direction where she knew his face would be. She just tried to focus on the back of his heels whenever she had to, in order to not lose sight of him completely. But even so, she felt she was lagging more and more behind. Although she wasn't sure she cared much anymore anyway, she only longed for someone to grab hold of that shape-shifting, damp, whispering ghost inside her head and strangle it once for and for all. I could do it, you know, her guide suddenly said out of nowhere. Just when she'd felt every little trace of light or sense of meaning had slowly been sucked out of her, without her being able to even try to prevent it from happening. Strangle it, I mean. I could do it, if you let me. What? She replied at first, confused, as if she'd just woken up and wasn't really with it. Then she suddenly stopped and drew her breath. What had he just said? Did he know? Had he read her thoughts? What sort of man was he, really? He stopped, too. Now he turned around to face her. He stood completely still right in front of her and looked bigger and broader than usual, his right arm resting on his walking stick, his big blue eyes looking straight at her. She didn't dare to lift her eyes to meet his gaze, but she felt it penetrate her and shifted her feet uneasily. That ghost, it's trespassing, you know. No right to be there, lurking about the way it does. No right to drag you down, whispering nonsense in your ears. She felt utterly ashamed. He really could read her thoughts. What must he think of her? Still, she couldn't help asking, how? How can you strangle this fog-like shape-shifter inside me? He stopped and turned. Tell me everything, he replied. What? She did not understand. Tell me all your fears, everything you struggle with, all your discombobulated thoughts, your hopes, even that which makes no sense at all. As you may have noticed, I know your thoughts anyway. He laughed his disarming laughter and she started to relax a little. You know, every time you tell me everything that goes on inside you, this fog loses a little bit of its influence over you. Have I not shown you that I am very good at helping you with whatever you need? She nodded and remembered. Sandwiches, water, rescue, comfort, shoes. I've got it all inside my chest pocket, you see? He winked at her. She was still a bit confused. What is it that you got that inside that pocket? You never really showed me. Why, it's my heart, of course, he exclaimed triumphantly. It contains everything you need. Oh, golly, I thought you'd never ask. In the end, she had but one main pressing question nagging her, and after a small battle with herself and her shame, she decided to express it, just as he had asked her to do. Will this fog never disappear? She let out a big sigh. I'm so tired of it. If I had known my journey would be like this, I would never have embarked on it in the first place. More and more often, I find myself longing for that sunlight greeting me good morning through my kitchen window at home. She put her hand in her pocket and felt the familiar shape of the old key, the old front door key. She took it out and let it rest in her hand for a moment. It felt heavy. Exactly! You're absolutely right, he exclaimed, and his penetrating blue eyes sparkled. If you had known what would have happened, you never would have left your house and locked that front door for the last time. But you did. And when the time is just right, the fog will lift, and surely as I'm standing here right next to you, and then I will personally take you to a very special viewpoint so you can get some rest and enjoy the sun warming your face, drink in the fresh air, and admire beautiful landscape. In fact, it seems we're not far off now. Trust me. Just as he said this, she suddenly noticed a thin ray of sunlight finding its way through the fog. It created sparkles of light in the small metal key in her hand. I love it when that happens, she heard her.